Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Well, Catherine's late. Look, the show is beginning.
I've been and gone, mate.
Okay, all right. Okay, you're going to sit over there tonight, are you?
Yes.
Late Night Alternative. My uvula is huge today.
Boasting.
It is huge. I woke up this morning and I coughed and something felt wrong. And I went to the mirror and looked and my uvula, I can make sit on my tongue. This is true. This is, you know, the uvula is the little boxing punching bag at the back of the throat. It's swollen and I won't do it now, but I will do it at some point. You're going to see it.
It's his favourite thing today, so you're going to see it.
It sits on the back of my tongue. It goes up and sits.
Well, don't go then.
Well, I want people to know that I'm very poorly. And I'm
still... But you don't like to talk about it.
I do like to talk about it. I'm being a very brave soldier. Robin Ince is here. Good evening,
hello.
Robin.
Hello. I've had that before with the uvula. Yeah.
Have you?
Normally during the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And you have that night where you think, I've got to swallow whatever's stuck in my throat. And then you realise you've actually been trying to swallow your own throat. And then you go to a high street chemist and they always have they go, well, we do have something under the counter. And they bring up this incredible drink that's made of kind of vinegar and honey. And it's disgusting. And it's disgusting enough for you psychosomatically to think, well, it must have cured me in some way.
They have medicines under the counter?
Well, it's just like medicines that are so unglamorous. That are so much a 17th century apothecary with all manner of spiders' legs hanging in them. Yeah. And they think best to keep that hidden.
I don't want to... By the way, this coffee has got coconut milk in it.
Oh, I've got yours in.
There we go. This is terrible. So I don't want to sound racist, but...
Oh, God.
Those Chinese herbalists... What is that about? I went to one once. Thank you. I went to once when I was at university because I had this kind of mark on my face that came about because I had quite sensitive skin on my face. And when I was working at B-Jams, the young lad who was working there squirted me in the...
B-Jams.
Oh, man.
Can I just say that you might as well, between B-Jams and Rumbelows, you've created a Proustian sense of delight for me there.
Yeah, I got my BBC Micro from Rumbelows. But he squirted me in the face with Jif, and it set up a chain reaction.
Stop.
Hello?
Jif lemon or Jif for the toilet?
Jif lemon.
Oh.
And anyway, for years I had like a big red mark there that would sometimes pustulate. And at university I was into crystals. I went on a crystal healing course, which I've mentioned before. That was true. And I thought, well, I'm going to go and try the Chinese... herbalists. And I went in, I said, look, I don't suppose you can cure this. And they said, oh, we can cure anything. We can cure anything. I said, well, I've got this. And she looked at it and she went, right, I know exactly what you need. Basically, a load of old leaves and bark and stuff. And I had to boil it up every day and drink it every day. And she said, within 2 weeks, that is going to be gone. And of course, a month of drinking this and it was still there.
Did you take that up with her? Or?
I didn't go back.
Yeah. That's why she thinks she's curing everyone.
They refuse to go back. I didn't go back. But they're allowed to set up in the high street. There's one in Windsor High Street I noticed today. That's not... Why have we not arrested these charlatans?
Because no one goes back.
Okay, all right.
What you need, by the way, the next time you get a Jif injury is you need to take a homeopathic amount of pancake and that will actually cure you.
Now, Robin Ince is here. Robin has got a book. I'm a joke and so are you. And my nearly 7-year-old youngest son, who I only found out last night, thinks that a screen is called a scream. We were talking about this. He said, look at the TV screen. I said, I beg your pardon? The TV screen, look at that. And I said, oh, yeah. He thought the title of this book was hilarious.
Good.
He saw it in my car and he was in hysterics. I'm a joke and so are you. And he just... absolutely wetting himself with laughter. So the nearly 7-year-old market, Robin, cornered it.
As long as they don't open it in the shop, as long as they buy it at the point of cover, everything is absolutely fine.
Or if you can somehow get it so it opens at the page with Nina Conti and Monkey, then
that would be a lot of fun.
She's brilliant, isn't she?
Yeah,
I've not seen her for years and years. She was always one of my favourite turns.
Well, it gets better and better, and it's such a... If I'm sure you've seen, I don't know if you've seen, just this, the routine where basically she's got Monkey, her and then she removes Monkey, but she keeps being a ventriloquist just with a hand, and then the hand drops down and she's still being a ventriloquist, and then she opens her mouth, and out comes the voice of Monkey. And that, to me, is up there with watching Dead of Night or any of those portmanteau things where I'm a ventriloquist, and he's alive. He's alive. Oh, don't be so silly. He did the murder, not me. It really did feel like that moment.
What was that? What's the Anthony Hopkins?
Magic.
Magic, where he's an old boozer. I watched that when I was 11, when we first got our video recorder. It must have been 9 or 10. And we were allowed to tape anything. Magic for a 9-year-old boy is kind of a heavy... Have you seen it?
I don't think so.
It's great. I don't know if it would stand the test of time, but he plays like a boozy old ventriloquist and his dummy comes to life, tries to kill him, but is it his dummy coming to life? Is it him who's doing it? Is it actual magic? I can't remember the twist of it, but it was for a 9-year-old... That was heavy.
Yes.
It was one of the only three films that our generation could watch. It was Magic, The Wild Geese and The Medusa Touch. They were the three films that were always somehow available.
When you went into video... Kids these days, with their YouTubes and their Netflix, you can get anything. And your torrents, you can get anything. We would go in... You're right, we'd go into a video store... I mean, you were lucky to have three, because I'm guessing you have VHS. We have Betamax.
No, of course we have Betamax. My dad thought it was the future.
There we go, posh.
Well, it should have been. The quality was superior.
Oh, the quality was great. This is the thing, thank you.
They just didn't make decent porn on it. That's the problem.
Even into the 90s, you would still hear a parent saying, I mean, the thing that's so ridiculous is, it really, the tape doesn't go through as many spools. It's ridiculous.
I used to love it. I'm only halfway through your book, and the look of disappointment on your face... When I was struggling to read a Carly Simon book that I found quite hard. We've got Jeff Goldblum tomorrow. You've kind of fallen between two stools, Robin.
I love the fact that this Carly Simon book is worse than when I tried to read Bertrand Russell's History of Western Philosophy. So many big words, phenomenology. What's going on?
I couldn't get through it. I felt so sorry for her. I had to keep putting it down. Very sad story, the Carly Simon story. Used by men. For their sexual pleasures and gratifications, basically.
Oh, a book I'd recommend, quite an old book now, Simon Garfield, who wrote The Wrestling and has written many other interesting documentary books. I think his first one's called Expensive Habits, and each chapter is about how people in the music industry are ripped off, how the artist is ripped off. And then the final section of the book, which is an enormous section, is basically all about Hazel O'Connor.
Oh.
And it turns out every single
She did all the ripping off.
All the different... All the different ways of being ripped off she had done to her.
Really?
Horrible. And it is, like you say, there's certain books. You read it and then you go, I need to just stop now because there's just a general sadness.
Yeah. We've got a phone call. Oh, by the way, so Robin's here. We can talk about the book. We'll talk about the fact that 2 days ago it was the 20th anniversary of the 11 o'clock show. Mm. Wowzers. What did you do to celebrate?
I played Crick Howell, the small village in Wales.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well,
they didn't have it because of S4C, so it was fine.
I made vaguely racist and homophobic slurs to random people in the street, and it was great. It was great times.
the Elephant Castle Shopping Centre again.
Yeah, they're knocking that down, and I just think...
Is it because of you?
I think... I remember once going there, and we used to go there all the time because you got people that couldn't speak English and mental people. That was it. I mean, basically, that was it. That's what we went there for. And
our former colleague at Three Counties would call a vox face.
There we go, vox face. Yes, very much
likely.
A vox face. And security guard came out one day, and we said, "Well, it's not a problem. We're outside the shopping centre." He said, "No. You're allowed to do it. It's just..." Well, this has been going on for months and we didn't know how to say this, but I've got to come out and say it. Your microphone is interfering with the bingo and we're hearing a lot of what you're saying, and some of it's just a little bit too fruity for the old people. Some people are getting offended. So I just wonder, can you change the frequency?
Gosh, and those are people who've been through the war.
Yeah, yeah. Terrible.
I can't believe it. So there was a godlike intervention that told you had a calling to be a bingo caller, and nevertheless you ignored it.
Is that what it was? Well, this is kind of bingo calling. 0344 499 1000. You know the rules. You can phone in and talk to Robin about whatever you want. Or you can just phone in and, you know, we have a phone call. I don't know if it's for us. Put your headphones on. It's David. Hello, David.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yes. You were talking about oovulas, weren't you? I've had mine out.
You've had your oovula out?
Yeah, they took it out because I had sleep apnea. And they thought it was making me choke at night, but that wasn't the issue. My tonsils were the issue on a serious note. But no, I mean, they took it out.
On a serious note, the tonsils. But the uvula's just a bit of fun. So, but hang on, why did they take it out? Did it swell to an enormous size?
Well, they thought it was making me throat block up, and
what is it for?
I used to wake up choking. I mean, this is serious stuff. I could have been dead, but
we're lucky to have you here with us this evening.
Thankful.
And when they took it out, I said, "Can I have it?" And they said, "No, we've got to throw it in the incinerator."
This is the thing that gets me. When you have a bit of... I don't know if you've ever had an operation and had bits of your body removed, Robin. You're not allowed to ask. We can ask, but they won't give you the bits back.
If you chop your neighbour's bush, you've got to throw it back. Sorry? But they can pull things out of you and not give it back to you.
Oh, if a neighbour does an operation on you, then have to be thrown back. But if anyone in the medical profession does, then they've got a totally different set of rules.
They've got to chuck your testes or your uvula over the fence into
if
your garden.
Hanging over, then that's what's got to happen.
How was your life different since losing that, David?
Well,
You can't finish a sentence, it would appear. I don't know if that's a direct result.
You can, like, breathe out in a certain way and you can move it, can't you? And it flaps around and I can't flap it around anymore because it's not there.
Well, David, thank you very much indeed. It's a beautiful image. Someone has tweeted me that Lizzie says you can get uvula piercings. You can get them pierced.
Why?
Wow. That's prompted a reaction.
Who's going to see it?
Your dentist, your lover.
Even as a kind of, if it was meant to enhance some form of kissing, then you have to find the length of tongue that's correct. No, this doesn't work.
It can
work
only
out
be
at
for
all
the pleasure of Gene Simmons if you're kissing him or a cow. It can't be for oral pleasure, can it? Because a lot of these piercings in the tongue and in the genitals are for pleasure during sex to increase stimulation. The tongue is supposed to be, I've never experienced it, a pierced tongue is supposed to be incredible for oral sex on either a man or a woman. But that's too far back. I mean, that is... Lizzie, I'm assuming you've got it done because you've tweeted me and you look the sort from your avatar. Let us know why you did it.
Who thinks of these things where they look at that perverts wobbling about and go, I could jazz this up?
It's perverts. Remember we had three counties where we met? This caller came in one day.
Oh God!
And he went, I've got my balls pierced. Oh, that's great. And then he just stood up and whopped them out, and just very close. I'm offering so very close with his pierced testicles out. Why would you
thanks for making me leave the room for that, by the way. I'm very grateful.
We will talk about the book in a second. Oh, and you've got the pleasures.
None of those things are in the book, by the way. If anyone has now been turned off the idea of the book, no, there are neither illustrations nor paragraphs.
There's always a second edition.
But I'm prepared to doodle in mine, and when I finish, give it away. 0344 499 1000. This is the Late Night Alternative on Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. Listen. Phone. Talk.
Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Hello, I'm Jamie East. Now, as well as being on Talk Radio every afternoon between 1 and 4pm, I've just started a brand new podcast that I wanted to tell you about. It's called Talk Film. We've got interviews with the big stars like Martin Freeman, Tandy Newton, Josh Brolin, loads of them. And also all of the reviews of the week's big releases. There's a new episode every Thursday, available through Apple Podcasts and your favourite podcast app. Just search for Talk Film and give it a whirl. If you like it, please hit that subscribe button.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Ian Lee, Catherine Boyle, we're joined by Robin Ince. I guess we've worked together on and off, mainly off, but on and off for about 20
yeah,
years.
Yeah,
were you there at the beginning of the 11 o'clock show? When did you?
No, I was halfway through series, or beginning of series two. I started to do John Peel meeting Pol Pot and doing a disco for him and things like that. And it was rather fun.
One of the most uncomfortable experiences of many on the 11 o'clock show was, remember the Christmas special we did?
Oh, it was with Frank Carson.
Was Frank Carson
yep,
on it?
Frank
yes.
Carson was
and
on that.
And James were playing. They had a band. It was, and we suddenly, for some reason, we all moved into the bigger studio.
Oh,
so normally
God.
We're in the small studio of maybe 200, 150. And then we're in a bigger studio that held like 500, 600. It was massive. And it was the same. It was like when they do a movie version of a TV show where the set looks the same, but it's not quite right. And it was the same with this. The set just felt bigger. And I remember, I think it was... Was it you doing John Peel and Alex Lowe doing Jimmy Savile?
That's right, yeah.
Wow.
What
I
combo?
Don't think that's available on YouTube
I think
anymore.
It is, actually.
Oh, my God.
I think it is. But your microphones died.
Yeah.
So the audience couldn't hear any of it. But I guess it was Dom English, the producer, was going, now, carry on, we'll just dub the laughter in later. And so it was like, it was a long old sketch. It was like 5-6 minutes long.
Wow.
And nobody in the studio could hear anything. Zero laughter. Fair play to you too. You just both just kept carrying on like the couple of old pros that you are. Of course, Alex Lowe came off afterwards going, oh God, I was awful. I was terrible. You had to mash
I hope Kenneth Branagh wasn't watching that. Bloody hell, I haven't had a decent part for him since I played the woodsman in Peter's Friends.
but that was such an uncomfortable...
The whole thing was bizarre because also I was doing the warm-up on it because I used to do the warm-up on the show, having presumed it was 156. They went, oh, you can still do the John Peel. Now, that would have worked in 150-seater, a man in a beard and flares, dressed like that, but then trying to engage 600... Yeah, it was very... And then Frank Carson just didn't stop. I mean, Frank Carson was Frank Carson.
Yeah.
If you invite Frank Carson, you don't expect to have kind of Samuel Beckett-style pauses and silences. It's just boom,
relentless,
boom,
yeah.
It was strange. A very strange and relentless show.
It's a very strange experience. Let's speak to Alan, then we're going to talk about the book. I'm a joke and so are you. I've tweeted the links to it and I'll tweet them out again. And if there are specific links where you get more bang for your buck, Robin, then let me know.
No, it's. I mean, you know, if people can, it's nice if people do, you know, kind of independent things, more independent things.
Yep.
But anyway, it'll make no difference to me. I just hope people read it.
I tell you what we'll do. We'll check that the Big Green Bookshop, they're our independent
choice. Oh, I will be. I'm doing a show for them in December, I think.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. All right, then we'll find the link on their website because they are our independent bookshop. Of choice. We like them. They do a lot of good work. It's a cool shop. But Alan Caddick's on the line. Good evening, Alan.
Hi, Mark.
Hello, Alan. How are you?
Hello, man. I got another 10-hour death announcement.
Hang on. Alan phones us up to tell us who's died.
He's a not-so-grim reaper. He loves it.
Quite often, quite in sensitive ways, but not deliberately. But who's passed away now?
Flog It.
Sorry?
The programme Flog It.
Okay. I like Flog It. I like the guy that presents it. You wear a Flog It?
Yeah, I think I've seen it a bit. But was that one of those kind of 5 in the afternoon things? Yeah.
Well, because they're having a big revamp of daytime television, apparently, is the
they
thing.
They better not mess with Four in a Bed.
Well, no, this is the BBC. This is the BBC. So Four in a Bed is going to... But by the way, tell Robin, he'll be impressed. How many Four in a Beds have you got series linked on your box?
Turns out about 160.
Whoa!
Yeah.
That's insane, isn't it?
I'm going to have to take some time off to watch them.
That's sad, Alan. You must be very upset by that.
Yeah, because I didn't know it was going for 17 years.
Yes. Well, it certainly has. What are you going to do now that it's going?
What's more pointless?
Okay, there you go. Well, that's sorted.
Oh, I'm glad he mentioned pointless. All I want to say is I'm much better than Jim Alcleely on that.
Well, hang on. Did you go on pointless?
Yep.
Did you win?
Yep. And it is, and I had to keep it secret. I took it seriously.
Yeah.
Don't say. And then they didn't put the episode out for about 18 months.
They
it was
it
me
ages,
and Kate
they?
Williams against John Cooper Clarke. This in the Dr. John Cooper Clarke.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, I won't take it seriously, but I just hope I'm not embarrassed. You know. And then by round two, you go, we better win this.
Yeah.
Kate. And Kate was like, yeah. And you could see Xander Armstrong getting rid, because he was like, come on, hurry up, everyone. I've got a big dinner to go to with some Tory MPs and stuff. Hurry up, hurry up. No, you do not hurry us up. You're asking us about the lowest exporting coffee growing nations. And we're going to think this through because we want a little bit of perspex.
Yeah.
Anyway, non-equatorial Guinea is a good answer.
And did you win the grand prize as well, or did you just get to the final?
No. We did. We had a pointless answer.
But you, what, in the last round?
Yeah.
Wow. Because I didn't. I was doing it with Cheggers. And we didn't. But we got those lovely little trophies that now, I think it's in my garage in a plastic box. I'm not totally sure. I might give it to the boys.
It's such an interesting... Because that bit we go, now hang on a minute. Now I myself would think Sid Barrett would be quite a popular answer. But now hang on a minute. Let me go into the minds of the... thing. Yeah.
And I hadn't really... I was aware of it and I'd seen bits of it. Alan, sorry, could you breathe a little...
I just had an idea of a topic.
That's OK. Well, hang on, let's just breathe.
Hold on to that idea.
We're sharing pointless stories, so just hold your breath if you can, or breathe softly, my love.
OK.
I was aware of it, but I wasn't completely aware of it, you know, and I did it because they paid me a grand, you know, as you do it. So, yeah, of course I do. Fantastic money.
Great. Now this has created a level of animosity
sorry,
in the studio.
Robin. And I did it, and I was the first person to answer a question. And before he asked me the question, I said, "Alexander, can you just remind me what I'm supposed to do again?" It was a genuine thing. First answer, and I wasn't bothered. First answer, pointless. Suddenly, I was in. Suddenly, I was hooked. The show had its claws in me, and I was hooked. And when we beat Rav from Crime Watch, and Michelle Heaton from Liberty X. What a day. And Anthony Costa from Blue. And we destroyed those suckers.
But then there was that small incident.
Oh, well, I was accused of being a racist. Yes, there was I was accused of being a racist. And that was, which, you know, I was watching the show with my boys. And then we went and had dinner. And I thought, right, well, the show's finished. I'll check online just to see people saying nice things about me. And then there's Daily Express, Ian Lee in racist slur and pointless. The Metro, Ian Lee is a racist. And what it was, we had to do bands from pointless bands that had won Brit Awards in certain years. 1997, there were two girls in a shop, right? And I said, corner shop. Would have been around about the right time, okay. They were Asian-looking girls, and if you look closer, they were stood next to Spices. It was the Spice Girls. But then it became out that I was a massive racist because of that. What's your judgment? And this is important.
Well, I'm just impressed by how long you managed to keep it in. That's the main thing. I think
you know the truth.
And still, a grand. You got a grand.
Got a grand.
Alan... Shut up. Can't believe it. Tokens.
Yes.
Tokens again.
Yes, Alan.
I've got an idea of a topic talking about the pointless trophy.
Oh, yeah.
What was your favourite game show, Memento?
Well, what's yours?
A ceramic dusty bin.
Oh, I had one of them.
Well, did you win one?
I actually made one.
That's brilliant.
How did you make it?
In school.
Well, that's explained so much, Alan. Could you send us a photo of it?
Yes, I can. I'll email it in at ianlee.com.
Thank you very much, Alan. I look forward to seeing your homemade dusty bin.
Oh, I can tell you when I worked with Ted Rogers as well.
Oh, go on.
Yeah, musical, Wimbledon Theatre. Ted Rogers, Sue Pollard, Freddie Parrotface Davis.
Fantastic.
I remember another comedian saying to me, why are you doing that? I said, let me repeat. Ted Rogers, Sue Pollard, Freddie Parrotface Davis.
That's
fascinating.
That's incredible. What musical was it?
It was called That Showbiz. It was written by Jimmy Perry.
Wow.
And I met him on some daytime TV show, and it was fascinating because what happened was I turned up and everyone was a little bit worried because they were going, oh, there's an alternative
coming.
I hadn't slept very well, and they went, oh, okay, let's do the first dance routine. Come on, Robin. And I went, oh, I don't dance. And, of course, Jimmy Perry hadn't realised that the modern comedian is very short on skills.
Yeah.
Whereas, of course, the old-style comedian, they can sing, they dance, they do the whole thing. And, well, anyway, by the end of the morning, I'd been taken out of five of the dance routines. And every night at the end of the show, when we'd sing Dirty Old Car Mix, Fighting for Laughs, I could hear Carmen Silvera tutting as I was yet again out of time. I've had an interesting career at times.
When was that?
1997. Okay. And it was great. It was such a working with because I still love all of that kind of old world. It's like I spend a lot of time on YouTube watching footage of the Grumbleweeds, in particular Morris and Robin, like in you know, when they just became a double act. There's such lovely timing. There's such a kind of joy. And now, you know, Robin Colville does it with another guy who's come in, and he swapped roles. As opposed to being the straight man, he's now the kind of crazy one.
Isn't that funny?
And I'm addicted to those things. It's like I remember Matt Lucas saying to me once, he goes, "I've got a weird thing." He said, "People find me so strange, but I love watching just old episodes of 3-2-1." I went, "There's nothing bizarre about that at all."
They used to show them on Challenge TV a lot, and I'd watch it. I could watch two or three back to back. Did you see that brilliant series they did on ITV, Last Laugh in Vegas, where they took Sue Pollard, Cannon and Ball, Bobby Crush, and a couple of others.
Mick Miller.
To Las Vegas. Did you see any of that?
And Jess Conrad.
Jess Conrad
is a mate, because last time I went to see Panto was at the Aylesbury Waterside.
You don't say Jess Conrad is a mate of yours?
No, he's amazing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say...
Because I think for our generation, I saw him in Joseph and the Technicolor
Anita
Dreamcoat.
Harris as well.
And he must have been about 50 then already. Yeah. But when I went to see Panto, and there was a bit, I think Anita Dobson was in it.
Yeah.
And then when Buttons comes out, and he goes, "And we've got some celebrities in the audience, ladies and gentlemen, he's the king of showbiz, Jess Conrad."
Wow.
And Jess stands up and like that. But of course, for a lot of generations, Jess Conrad is in a weird...
Yeah.
It's a fascinating career.
Oh, I don't know that much about him, but I love the fact that even at this age, he still plays the role of the huge star. That I don't know whether it's put on or it's now him, but that kind of that slight arrogance, that looking down his nose at everyone
else.
He's
still a dreamboat, isn't he?
He's, you know,
he's like 83 or something, isn't he? And he mentions the Botox and everything, doesn't he?
But what we loved about them, we celebrate on this show a lot. Kind of the older comedians. We've had Tommy Cannon on and Eddie Large and Bernie Clifton. You know, all of that. We kind of celebrate.
Bernie Clifton is...
Oh, he's nuts.
But he's absolutely...
Great?
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think hugely underrated.
Yeah.
I think if you watch what Bernie Clifton does... I remember when he did his thing, sometimes he used to do this bit where he'd sing, "You gotta have tape. You've got..." And he wanders around the audience basically with a tape dispenser, a kind of, you know, parcel packing tape dispenser, and then till they're all entangled.
Takes them up.
And then he just goes, "Oh, I don't really know how to finish this. I don't know how to get anyone out." You know, and it, so everyone just is just... And I remember someone saying about he has these huge inflatables in his box, like big gondolas and an inflatable nun. And I think it was a Bristol Colston Hall. I was doing something with him there. And someone said so that right at the end, "Bernie, we're going to make all the doors open so you can get the..."
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Huge inflatable nun on stage, blah, 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 and they've got everything set up and every single, but they're all there, and he just forgot to do it, and there's just someone waiting with an inflatable nun and everyone, and it's just, he's magnificent.
And those people are, and we started kind of getting them on the show after what year was it that everyone died?
2016.
When everyone died, and you know, people would die, and then the next day they go, "Oh, we love them so much," and we kind of thought, well, let's get them on now and tell them that we love them now. And what was great watching that show, particularly with Cannon and Ball, just their years of training, their timing was incredible. Mm. You know, they could read each other. They could. There was a bit where they just had to, they were in a rehearsal room and they're playing music, and to loosen them up, everyone has to one at a time just dance across to the other side of the room. And Bobby Ball was the last one, and he starts moonwalking. And it was brilliant. And he moonwalked brilliantly. And it was just hilarious because it came from nowhere.
My favourite is and one of the shows where they sing "Sometimes When We Touch," and it's almost like only at the final rehearsal did they go, "Hang on, Tommy, I've just looked at the lyrical content of this, and it doesn't kind of match up with what." And their chairs are so far apart that they barely fit on the TV screen. It's just I have the 7-inch single of "We Are the Boys in Blue," which I got sent by the Rank Film Distributors, because when I was a kid, I used to write to Rank Film Distributors about once every 3 months, pretending I was doing a project about films, thinking they'd send me posters for Lewis Collins' "Who Dares Wins" and "The Wild Geese," and they just sent me increasingly large posters for Cannonball's "Boys toys in blue, till eventually I had one which was like 60 inches by 40 inches.
Wow.
And the final time, they also sent me the 7-inch single as if to go, we know what you're doing. You're not going to get any Lewis Collins merchandise, mate.
You said there's another one, it's going to be a billboard.
Yeah.
So, the book. Which my
Robin Ince, I'm a Joke and So Are You, which 7-year-olds find that title hilarious. A comedian's take on what makes us human. Got Matt Haig's name on the front, friend of the show. Stuart Lee's name on the front. So you've got two big names on the front.
What's it about? I've not read it.
Basically, it's about... Well, the idea is it originally started from just over 4 years ago. Yeah. I was doing an Edinburgh event. It was a night called Cheaper Than Therapy. And it was basically to raise money for Mind. And it was each night, different comics would come along and they'd either talk about their actual therapy or how comedy is therapy or whatever, do a stand-up routine. And the night I was doing it with a guy called Eddie Pepitone, who was a brilliant American comedian. And in the interval before Eddie and me then did a kind of sit-down chat about comedy, everyone turned on their phone and I just saw the whole room, just people kind of went, oh, and said, oh, what's happened? I didn't have a phone with it. And they said, do you not know? It's Robin Williams. And we were doing it on the night that Robin Williams had killed himself. And so we still did that, and Eddie had kind of known him. They weren't friends, but they were on friendly terms.
Yeah.
And they worked together. Then the next day, there were all of these articles in the press that just seemed to be Tears of a Funny Man, Another Tragic Clown stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought, these are... First of all, it belittles what happened. Well, of course, he was a clown, he's a comedian, this is bound to happen. And also, it didn't take into... In fact, very few people knew at the point, but Robin Williams also had very serious illness. And there were many other... We have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be... And so I started thinking around that point, which is there are so many clichés about comedians and this idea of the otherness of them.
Mm.
And actually what I think is interesting, having done it for nearly 30 years now, is that when you go on stage, you become an exaggerated version of yourself, right? So that is, not everyone does, but a lot of the people I work with, you know, Josie Long and Stuart Lee and people like that, you know, you go on and you're just a slightly exaggerated version of yourself. And so actually, rather than comedians being different, if you look at the exaggerated version and you work backwards, how much do you find out about all humans? So the book is about, and I talk to neuroscientists and psychologists and geneticists and lots of comedians as well, people like Noel Fielding and Sarah Kendall, and I talked to Alan Moore as well. Just trying to work out on each chapter, some of it's about social anxiety, some of it's about imagination, some of it's about inner voices, some of it's about why we become who we become. Mm. I mean, because again, with comedians, there's always that narrative. People love that narrative. Well, of course, something terrible happened in their childhood.
Yeah.
But again, of course, there's an enormous number of people who something happened, some loss or whatever it might be, who don't become comedians. But it does, by using that as the starting model, is to try and work out, you know, why are we the human beings we are? And then how do we cope? Because I think, you know, for stand-up it's a really fun coping mechanism. I mean, it can still drive you insane. And I know a lot of stand-ups where we go, I think this is the thing that's actually got me through. Or is it the thing that drove me mad?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of looking at those...
Stand-ups I did it briefly and I was never considered myself a stand-up. It was always a means to an end for me. But it's a weird thing to do, isn't it? To say, right, I'm going to stand in front of, you know, a complete room full of strangers and talk for 10, 20, 45, an hour... And with the main intention of making them laugh. It's a very, it's not the toughest job in the world. People that say that, I think, are wrong. But it's a very strange exposure to expose yourself like that and put that much pressure on you.
In another way, I was talking about this actually with Josie Long this evening in a book event, which it's the easiest part of the day.
Okay, go on.
Because you go on stage and, you know, we all have dud gigs and bad nights, but overall, you have an hour and a half or 2 hours where you're controlling the situation to some extent. This is me. And you know what way they're looking directly at you. You're looking at them. You are controlling. Whereas the moment you walk out in the street, there's people over there and there's people over there. And are they looking and going, who's that weird bloke over there and that rubbish cardigan? So it's this, for a lot of people I know, it's like the happiest bit of the day. After the worry is then you're going, look, I'm being ridiculous and I'm larking about and... So I think that's, you know, I know a few people who said, yeah, the bit on stage is easy. It's the other 22 hours, which is a nightmare.
What was your first, because we've worked together, I don't actually know that much about you, Robin. What was your first gig? What made you think, you know, I'm going to give this a go? How did that happen?
Well, it was, I mean, the first thing was just when I, once I saw, I mean, I've always had things like Laurel and Hardy and the Goodies, and then I saw Alexi Sayle on OTT, the kind of adult version of Tiz Was, you know, which was such a naughty show
OTT,
to watch.
OTT, yes, gosh.
You know, where you'd have Alexi Sayle and Bernard Manning on the show. You know, it was kind of at that point.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Rick Mayall before that with Kevin Turvey.
Yeah.
And I just went, this is the most brilliant thing in the world. So I had a real, and then I tried it when I was about 18, I did some terrible gig. And then probably, you know, I started probably in about 1992. So I was, but I knew I just really wanted to do it. And it is a thing that can drive you mad. But it is, yeah, it's just a, I think I said to you before that there's at the moment in the book talk, one of my favourite things is when I talk a little bit about people who influenced me. And one night I thought, ah, oh, it's a bit of a quiet night tonight. So I better, so I just suddenly sang Alexi Sayle's Wine Bar song. And to leap around on the stage, pretend to be Alexi Sayle, basically just go, wine bars aren't called wine bars because of all the people dining. Wine bars aren't called wine bars because of all the people whining. Ever had a multiple orgasm? Yes, it made me sick. I loved love to hamster bird, I killed it with a brick. Rumpty toodle, pina colada, half a pound of muesli. What do you think of Shirley Williams? I want to go to the toilet. So doing something like that.
That is an amazing impression of Alexi Sayle. That's well,
there was a weird, because I don't think I mentioned it in the book, but again, about the kind of difficulty sometimes of when you become a comedian, you can, you know, it's not always easy for the partner. With Alexi, years ago, I got to know him about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago. And I said, would you come and do a gig with me? I'm doing this gig with an epidemiologist and a bluegrass band. And I think we need, you know, an author as well. And he went, I don't really do stand-up. I said, well, you don't have to do stand-up. We just have a conversation. You can do what you do at book things or whatever. And so Alexi came along, rode on his bicycle to Dalston, and we stood on stage together and did a bit of stuff. And then I rang him up about 4 weeks later. I said, oh, there's a gig to try and help a library that's they're trying to close down in Kensal Green. Do you want to come do that? And he just, the first thing he went, Linda hates you. And Linda's his wife. I went, I've not even met Linda. He went, yeah, she hates you. You're trying to get me back being a stand-up. And then he said this thing. He said, Linda said, what are you thinking, Alexi? You were number 15 in the top 100 stand-ups of all time. Don't go back. You'll dilute the legacy. And then that night he went on stage and he was just being all charming and, you know, doing the kind of talks. And then suddenly someone at the back shouted out, oh, Alexi, you know, just one of those drunken moments of excitement where someone's had a flashback to the comic strip in 1981. And suddenly Alexi just leapt up in the air and he just started going, that's right, Alexi's here. And I just looked at his wife, Linda, and she just put her head in her hands and you could just see her going, oh, God, the comic's alive again. For 15 years I've had an author. You know, an elevated author.
The drug addict fine has picked up some coke and has gone back. I used to use that library in Kensal Green. Did they close it down in the end?
If it's the one, I think it's the one that Mark Twain visited. And I think now they tried to. And I heard from someone the other day that there's volunteers there keeping it going.
Oh, good. I like that. You mentioned madness. There is a great. I have read half the book. There's a great bit. Honestly, this Carly Simon book was a nightmare. There's a great bit in there about the voices in our heads that I guess we all have to a certain extent, don't we? But you're suggesting that you're saying that some people are able to use the voices in their heads as a creative tool. You do to a certain extent.
I think that's the thing, is to try and make them as unintrusive and unobstructive as possible. There's Charles Fernerhoff, who I spoke to, who's written some wonderful books, including one all about how they're doing research into inner voices. And he talked to me about things like Pat Barker, the author of Ghost Road and Regeneration, amongst others. Apparently, she basically just sits there and waits for her characters to walk into her head. And she doesn't control them at all. She just listens to them and thinks, oh, good, Siegfried is soon saying lots today. That'll be helpful. and again, all of... I think I know that I possess whatever voices I have in my head. But then when people do have problems, when it does seem like a something separate, something which is you know, an unpleasant voice, what they're starting to do with research, in the way that Nina Conti, of course, you know, has a puppet and, you know, ventriloquism, you create for that. I mean, Nina in the book, it's very interesting. She basically says that she didn't realise, but the, you know, if anything, monkey's the honest bit, you know, and it's kind of... Yes, so what they do is they create avatars. So people sit and they make a face. They make, so they actually physicalise and go, right, this now is that voice that I have and this is what that voice looks like. And now, and that's part of, I think, a few times in the book, that thing that whether you're dealing with bereavement, whether you're dealing with intrusive voices, all the things, one of the things we can do as human beings is turn things into stories, turn them into an object, turn them into something. I mean, I found that when my mum died and then the first tour that I did after that, I did a couple of stories. They're quite stupid stories, quite stupid stories around the time that she... But I think in some ways what I was doing, by being able to turn it into a story, it made it, it was something that I could perhaps control more.
They do. I know with kids that have been abused, they do a thing where they get them to put a glove puppet on, and the puppet talks about what happened to save so it's to save the kid talking about it. Because quite often my voice is a different. It's funny the voices you hear. My negative voice, not so much now. It's kind of worn off a bit, but it still comes up. My negative voice is someone I went to college with. So 25 years ago, someone who I really looked up to and thought was very creative and very clever, and was a friend, but was also a bit of a bully. Mm. And we kind of stopped hanging out when I got the 11 o'clock show, because he thought it was just everything that was wrong with comedy, that kind of Chris Morris ripoff. But his is the voice that I hear that says, well, that's no good. That's a lousy idea. Why do you think that's going to work? Have your voices, are they different? Have you got people that say different things to you?
I mean, a lot of them I say out loud.
Right.
Because I'm around the house quite a lot on my own.
Singing
so
Sweet
kind
Caroline.
Singing Sweet Caroline. I was explaining to someone today that sometimes I have the actor Nicky Henson in my
Who's
head.
Nicky Henson?
Star of Witchfinder General, Psychomania, and an episode of Fawlty Towers, and also an RSC actor and stuff. And he had one of those 1970s voices where I'm wearing a cravat and I'm in a speedboat. And sometimes, so it actually comes out, and I'll just walk around the house going, I don't know what I'm going to do next, but I think I'm going to have a cup of tea because I'm Nicky Henson. So it's kind of, I think a lot of my love of films and media and stuff like that kind of comes into it. But yeah. I've never, I have the inner monologue, which is very judgmental, but I kind of know it's another fragment of me that's just going, that's the interest, for so many people with that strange mix of, self-loathing and high regard, which is strange clash.
That voice, the critical one, is that the one you're trying to entertain and make laugh?
I think it's a separate thing. I think it's what I count as my reality. I think I mean, I was saying to you when I walked into the studio, the moment you get a book out, you think, oh, I wonder if it will be ignored or hated.
Yeah.
And you find that you don't have the third voice that goes, it might go really well.
Yeah.
And so I think people have that to a greater or lesser extent. And part of what you need to try and do, and it's part of the thing that I'm kind of, is to sometimes just go, it's all right. Shut up.
Yeah,
it's okay, and that's and it's a much greater battle. I mean, the tour that I'm doing at the moment is called Chaos of Delight, and the whole 2 hours is just about things that I think are fantastic and delightful and wonderful and possibilities of the future and scientific. And by doing that for 2 hours, it means that on stage I have to be really, and I mean it, and I do mean it. If there are things that I really, but then that means 4 hours of the night, because for 2 hours afterwards I'm still happy in that. And so I think, but it is harder. It's much easier to go on stage and go, here's something else to get really angry about. Who else is angry about this thing? And that's quite, but then it means that you're just extending the anger of the day.
Well, that's what we try and do with this show. This is why we call it the late night alternative, because every other show right now is doing Muslims, is doing Boris Johnson's speech, is doing Brexit, is doing Trump. And we kind of thought, well, let's try and make a show that's celebratory. You know, it's why we got you in. We get people in that we like. We don't get every person touting a book. We get people in we like. And we kind of celebrate. It doesn't always work. We don't always get it right. But, for 3 hours a night, we try and celebrate stuff. Celebrate community and stories and art, And Jeff Goldblum.
I'm so envious.
But
it
would be
Jeff
so
Goldblum.
Easy to come on and go, oh, man, that Boris Johnson, what a tosser, and that, or whatever. But there's enough negativity around anyway.
It's such a monetized thing now.
Yeah.
The elevation of venality and spite, the trends of it. And I know there's a point. It's also much easier to, if you wander around, people think you're much cleverer if you just, I'll tell you what is it about human beings? I went to Westfield Shopping Centre the other day and looked at them all, they're awful, just like insects. I saw something in the nail bar. It's very easy to do.
Easy.
It's like it's harder to write reviews of things you love. I write a column about radio for The Big Issue. I write about you. I only write about things that I like, because I think there's loads of things out there that I probably won't like. But why don't I steer people to, hey, you might not know about this. But sometimes I go, oh, I've only got 200 words on this, because basically what I'm saying is it's really brilliant and it makes me feel happy. And then you work hard enough and you go, oh, no, I can write a whole column of this.
But it's harder.
It's harder.
We'll take a quick break. 03444991000. This is Talk Radio with Ian Lee, Catherine Boyle and Robin Ince.
A star-crossed soapbox for sailor boys, stable girls.
I'm
the end.
And stripper grands.
It depends who you're with and it depends on the situation.
Late Night Speech Radio with a difference.
Thank you.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
I'm just saying to Robin, you seem a lot more relaxed than maybe 10 years ago. I've seen you since then, but that's kind of when perhaps I saw you a bit more. You seem a lot more relaxed and chilled out, I think the kids say. Is that fit in with...
Yeah, I mean, it's what we were talking about during that break. There's just... I really do love what I do.
Yeah.
And it really... I mean, that's why sometimes you can then hit a bit of a wall, because when you get... Sometimes I think the worst insomnia I get is when I'm doing a show that I love, because it's as if your brain's going, I can find a way of pulling the rug from out of you. But overall, yeah, I think I'm in a very fortunate position where I get to do really exciting and bizarre things. And, you know, standing on a stage, standing in Wembley Arena, interrupting Brian Cox after he's confused the audience for 25 minutes, and then being on a raised plinth doing an impersonation of Brian Blessed, right? And then you go, there's 10,000 people watching me go, shut your face, Brian, oh, why aren't we going to Mars? You stupid bastard. Right, now that, and you go, and you come off stage afterwards and you go, yeah, didn't think I'd get that opportunity in my career.
I think last time I saw you was the Book Shambles, your podcast that you did with Josie Long. Josie Long is one of the funniest human beings that ever existed. She's just great, and we should put her on a throne and carry her around. Honestly, I think she's great. I'm in love with her. And that was maybe a couple of years ago. And I was
that's only about a year ago.
Was it?
Yeah.
I'd only recently discovered the Infinite Monkey Cage, and I don't know why, it just passed me by. I'd heard of it, I knew it existed, but I'd never really listened. And I'd started listening to it a little bit before I came in and did Book Shambles. And it's so good.
It's the most fun to do.
It's so good. It's funny, it's clever, it's intelligent, you learn something and you laugh. Honestly, I thought it was so brilliant. I don't know how that happened, though, how you ended up with Brian Cox, how that whole thing came together.
It was kind of, I mean, in some ways it was an accident in the way that about 14 years ago, maybe 15, I started doing shows which mixed up a bit of science as well. And then I used to do a show called The Book Club, where I'd get lots of kind of fantastic, weird acts. There used to be Gorka Gogo, who did fantastic felt costumes and puppets, and they used to do things like Elvis the Elephant Man, Elvis, and Liberace, who was half Liberace and half Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Terminator.
Liberace,
and my mate Joanna Neary and Josie did a lot of them as well, and we had lots of different people doing them, and Noel Fielding turned up and stuff, and then I thought, right, I've really enjoyed doing this, but I wonder if I could take this ridiculous kind of variety show and put a bit of science in it as well. Oh. So I would then get musicians and comedians, and then every now and again I go and I'll just throw in a particle physicist, and people think, oh, there's a particle physicist. I wasn't expecting. Oh, that's quite. Yeah, I didn't know about that. So that was kind of the start. And then I did a pilot with Brian. I can't remember Brian and the scientists Adam Rutherford and Kevin Fong. And I was just down the line as a kind of, you know, intermittent irritant to, again, break up the science a bit. Yeah. And someone listened to it and just thought, oh, hang on a minute. Maybe actually we want to do a show where you've got the intermittent irritant and the physicist. And that's kind of where it came from. And our producer, Sasha, who is remarkable and has a real tough job sometimes editing. I mean, I know when sometimes people come and see the live show, they think, well, I wasn't really expecting to be like that. And I go, yeah, this is the bits that you are not. Someone described me once, said, it's like seeing the id of Radio 4. they've unleashed it. But it was... So it happened, and I'd known Brian, and we'd done a few gigs together, and we'd done stuff like that. And it's just, and especially after, I think about the third series, we really hit the stride. And it's a joy, and we both genuinely love doing it.
Yeah.
It's like
you can tell that from listening
to it. Yeah, we've got a new series, we're going to do it. What are we going to do? Oh, we're going to do one about, you know, the latest things that we found out about particle accelerators, and we're going to do, we're going to have one where we've got a guest raven that comes on and actually does some tricks, which will be brilliant radio. And, you know, And I think that, and when we toured, I mean, we did last year and the year before, we did, I think, 150 dates together, and we only argued twice, and both times it was over equations. And some of the technicians said, when we were doing like the arena tours, they went, we've never seen two people just as relaxed, and we'd just be backstage mucking about. Have a little in joke, and then suddenly you go, the Brian Eno music's nearly finished, you better wander out there. And then, welcome to
he's
the
he's a phenomenon, Brian Cox, because kids love him. My mum has got such a crush on Brian Cox, dear God, it's horrific. I didn't know until we chatted last year, you were doing these arena shows and
stuff.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And that's incredible, man.
Yeah, that's so exciting.
Absolutely. And it's brilliant. I mean, the fact that he can be such a big draw, you know, and they're a joy to do, is because just that balance between the science and then we do some mucking around, and you look at the audience. People send, mothers and fathers send pictures of their 8-year-old who are sitting there with their exercise books out, making notes, making notes, you know, in Nottingham Arena. Oh, I didn't quite get that. Sorry, can you just go back
how
a bit?
Funny. And it's great.
And it's such a broad, and the lovely when you get tweets from people going, I didn't really understand a word of it, but my 10-year-old's explaining now. It's getting a lot, and yeah, it's
and Book Shambles, you're still doing Book Shambles.
Still
That's
doing Book
your
Shambles.
Podcast about books with Josie Long.
Yep, the next Josie is not doing so many at the moment because she has had a baby.
Oh,
so she will be back. To, you know, we try and do as many together as possible. But I've had Alan Moore is replacing Josie Long this week. I've done a couple of podcasts with Alan Moore and Barney Farmer, who writes the brilliant Viz cartoon strip Drunken Bakers, and who has written a book called Drunken Baker, which I promise you is utterly remarkable and brilliant. And if it wasn't, I think, something that grew out of Viz, then literally people would be going, this is one of the most fascinating monologues from the perspective.
Some of that.
It's really good.
Yeah. And how's that's going well, is it? But people, the thing about you and Josie is you've got very kind of, and I guess like this show to us in a smaller level, but you have a lot of very nice kind of hardcore fans that like everything you do and follow you around and what's the word I'm for? Grateful. They're grateful that there are people out there making something that doesn't quite fit into the norm. You know, where else are you going to get two comedians talking about books with a guest? You know, in that much detail, so Vonnegut heavy. And I imagine you've got a lot of people that are grateful that you're doing these kind of things.
Well, I think you have that moment of realisation. Some people get it earlier, some people get it later. But I remember in an earlier part of my career, there was that bit where you're going, oh, I suppose I better try and do that panel show and I better go on that thing. And you think there's a route and then there is a point. And some people do use that route and some people... But for me, there was a sudden point where I went, hang on a minute, what am I thinking? Why did I go into this in the first place? And I remembered when I was 15, 16 years old, going down to, you know, kind of comedy clubs and cellars, and there's an a cappella singer and there's someone doing some kind of weird kind of acrobatics. And then there's, you know, at that point, Vic Reeves holding a lobster, or was it a crab, while singing the Star Trek theme tune. And I thought, that's, you know, the thing you need to do, or what I needed to do, was do things that I really loved and was passionate about. And so I think all the things that I do with Josie and I do with Brian and the things I do on my own are things that I really care about. And then you go, and a lot of the ideas started off with people going, oh, that's a terrible idea. Mm. Like the science shows, people went, oh, that's not going to work at all.
Yeah.
And some people would say to me, there's no money in that. Why are you doing that? And then you do find yourself years down the line, as I said, standing on a rising plinth shouting, as Brian blessed, and you go, oh, it's all right idea, wasn't it?
I think it's because we need wonder, little moments of wonder. We seem to be being told all the time that the world is crap and everything's going to go to hell in a handcart and there's nothing we can do about it but be cross about it. Mm. And what you do is, with it, whether it's the books or the science, it's just a little moment of discovery.
I know, I agree. I think we need one. And I think, but we recognise that a bit more having kids of 6 and 8. And, you know, it's, you see the world through their eyes.
For them, science, I mean, this is a whole generation of kids for whom science is not hard and frightening. Like when we were doing it at school, it's kind of, oh, this is going to be so complicated and boring, right? Not so anymore, because, no. I mean, you make it sing and dance like a Jean-Michel Jarre concert.
But that's it. I think, I mean, lots of different things that I'm involved with. And the book is one of them, actually. It's about these things, which is giving people permission. Giving people, you know, a lot of the science things that we started doing was because I thought, well, I was, you know, there was a point where I became rubbish at science. Mm-hmm. And you live that time where you go, oh, I don't really have a science mind. And then I started to work on these things and going, well, everyone's got questions, as you said, wonder and curiosity and wondering why the stars twinkle and all those things. And then by doing, you know, one of my silly shows where I go, I'm an idiot, but it doesn't mean that I can't try and ask these questions. And then people go, oh, that's all right then. And I think, you know, in the same way, dealing with, you know, inner voices, strange behavior, all that kind of thing, of just saying, we're, you know, we are a multitude, we're such a confused mix of things, and you have permission. I mean, Josie does a great thing called Arts Emergency, which is to try and get more and more people from deprived backgrounds, etc., doing saying you can be in the arts, you are allowed to be a poet, you are allowed to be a screenwriter, you are allowed to. And again, so much I think of popular culture is saying this is not for you, and this and I think, you know, like you were talking about this show as well, which is filled with a lot of joyous things and a lot of celebratory things, and a lot of it is saying you can be you know, permission to be absurd.
I'm enjoying your book. I've just read the bit about persona, and I thought that was brilliant. But we'll come back anytime you want, Robin.
Thank you.
Really, it's genuine. It's really nice to see you. The book is Robin Ince, I'm a Joke, and So Are You, A Comedian's Take on What Makes Us Human. I'm going to tweet. You can get it in all the usual places, but I'm going to tweet the Big Green Bookshop link. I'm going to find that in a second. At Robin Ince.
Yep.
Any other things that you need to tell them about?
I mean, I'm on tour perpetually until the 17th of December. So this week I'm in Bristol, Birmingham, Bromsgrove, Ilkley, Leeds and Henley. Then I'm in Cheltenham, Newcastle, North Allerton, Nottingham. And I've forgotten from there on.
Isn't that exhausting?
Yeah, it's quite a bit. Again, it's that bit where you get the exhaustion and you can go, you know, you're in that hotel room where there's the noise and you hear all that, but then you grab that other bit and go, imagine. It's like when you think, I wish I could just have a normal job. Do you know what? We should all be punished when you think that and go, well, you are going to have to get up at 6:30 and you're going to have to stand on an awful train and it's going to be packed and you're going to do something joyless. So, it's not that it's always easy, but it's... And I sometimes before a gig, there are moments where you just go, oh, this one hasn't sold as well. But the moment you hit the stage and you think, whoever's turned up, this will be a laugh, won't it?
Come on, Birmingham, pull your fingers out. What the hell is wrong with you? Robin, it's nice to see you.
Thank you.
03444991000. This is the Late Night Alternative on Talk Radio.
The radio show where the owls are not what they seem.
Do you or have you ever watched Twin Peaks?
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee.
They could be dreaming and meeting each other in their dreams.
On Talk Radio.